Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with our editor-in-chief, Lisa Henderson. For today's episode of the ACT podcast, we are speaking with Colleen Hoke, co-founder and CEO of Objective Health.
So Colleen has more than 25 years of experience in the areas of business development, organizational management, and executive team building. She has spent time with Charles River Laboratories, Novum Pharmaceutical Research Services, and CertQuest Labs. Colleen holds a bachelor's degree of science from the University of Tennessee and is a graduate of the Wharton School of Business Executive Leadership course. So thank you for joining us, Colleen.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. Very excited about what we have to talk about today and hopefully sharing some food for thought for folks out there in the entrepreneurial clinical trials health technology space.
Thank you again for joining us, Colleen. So the first question that we want to get into today is, how did you get into early phase research?
Well, that's a good question. I think people, first of all, and I don't mind sharing, I graduated college in the early 90s. At that time, clinical research was really done in academic institutions only. I have a business degree, Bachelor of Science in Business Administration. And I was really interested, maybe I got into the wrong field, but I was really interested in science and research. I had done an executive undergrad program with St. Mary's Hospital, and I wrote the patient newsletter and then got involved with cancer care research. So my first job out of school was as a marketing coordinator at a company called Response Oncology, and they helped coordinate research care and other cancer care, largely for women with breast cancer looking for a bone marrow transplant, all in the context of a research study. Company, you know, took off, grew quickly, and I had the opportunity to have many different layers of responsibility in that company. And one of them ended up being lobbying tech assessment groups for payers, third-party payers, to expand coverage, and in this instance, in breast cancer care. And of all the things that I was doing, I loved the research. I loved the research and looking at it as a healthcare option. I didn't love lobbying third-party payers, the revenue cycle management side of healthcare, as they say. So when in my next opportunity in my career, I met a physician, a nurse. This is now in the Seattle area. And there were two nursing homes side by side in Tacoma, Washington. They did not meet code any longer, but they were functioning as a 30-bed clinical pharmacology unit. A doctor had started this unit. At the time, clinical pharmacology research or first-in-human research was small trials, largely, you know, 18 to 30-year-old males. And the science had really taken off where the studies were more complex and the patient populations desired were also highly varied now in terms of who inclusion, exclusion criteria and trials. All of that was really, really exciting to me. And I was able to get involved with this very small clinical pharmacology unit, early phase research at a good time in my career, and then work with a team of folks to grow that entity. And we did. But it was a really fun time. So sometimes your interests align with a tremendous opportunity, and then you just need to jump right in. So that's how I got involved in early phase clinical research, really almost accidentally, but an interest in research in general, and then a good opportunity to work with a small core team. And it happened to be in early phase clinical research. And I loved it.
So Colleen, when you worked in that Response Oncology, you know, that would be a time when, you know, breast cancer survival rates were not what they are now, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. So it was a bone marrow transplant, trying to research that as an option for treatment.
Yes, it was really interesting. It was for a certain subset of patients with physicians who were transplant trained. So Physicians, for example, that were trained at Sloan Kettering, but were no longer at Sloan Kettering, they were in the community. Could a subset of patients be treated with high-dose chemotherapy? And it was a certain type of bone marrow transplant called, and they still use this today, autologous peripheral stem cell support, but it's really a bone marrow transplant, just in layman's terms. So could these patients be treated in the community? And that's what Response Oncology was trying to prove, the case that across the country, there were patients who could be treated where they lived. They didn't have to go away from their family at such an important time in their lives and still receive state-of-the-art care, advanced care. So that was the premise of the company. The company ended up getting involved in physician practice management entities and grew in other ways, I'll also say, that's separate than research. But I was on the research side and I loved it.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, you were just explaining that you got into this opportunity to build up that pharmacology unit or situation. But in your bio, it says you were a key member of an executive team that built a successful early phase research site that was later acquired by a major research corporation. Is that the same situation?
It is. We took it from about 30 beds to 250 beds.
Wow.
And we were acquired by Charles River Labs. And we built a building that was exciting. I probably know more about real estate than I want to know for sure. But I don't know. I'm probably not going to build a building again. I'll say that. But yes, that's that same entity. And then I ended up working for Charles River on a global scale. They had another clinical pharmacology or early phase clinical unit in Scotland, in outside of Edinburgh, several sites. Ended up staying with Charles River for about 4 years. And what was awesome about that experience is it was at a world-class kind of organization. So I had been from a very small organization, entrepreneurial, to now a world-class business, and still today, Charles River's wonderful place and great people and great leadership. A lot of great things to say about Charles River.
Just to reflect on that, the entrepreneurial piece, then going into a larger company, what do you think the differences were? And then what did you most take away from the Charles River experience?
Definitely from a small organization to a large organization, the pace is different. You're obviously in a smaller organization, you can make decisions very quickly. So very timely, right? What I would say about a larger organization though, because you have a broader group of people, theoretically, but this was true in Charles River, because you had a number of experts in their various fields to vet ideas, the accuracy of the idea, the process, the policy, the new thing was likely greater. In other words, you didn't have to fail as much, but it took longer to get the new idea implemented. I don't know if any of this is a surprise to you, but that's basically the gist of it. I think teamwork, you have to work harder in a larger organization to align interests than you do in a smaller organization. Because in a smaller organization, again, theoretically, but what's true at Northwest Kinetics was true at early phase CPU, high degree of trust because everyone knows what everyone else is doing and job descriptions are really clear. So there's real trust between you and your team members. In a large organization, it can be so diffuse, so much harder to develop that similar kind of energy and trust just because you don't know. Not that it isn't, that it shouldn't be there. It's that you don't know. So you're not as energized by that. And it's not as clear when you go to embark on new endeavors.
Thank you. Those are all really great points. Thanks for sharing that.
No problem. Anyway, so ultimately, I left Charles River to move to Nashville, which is where I am today, from the Seattle area, for a family reason. And then I left the company and ended up going into consulting, which I did not love. Me personally, I like high-fiving people, and sometimes consulting is very much you're handing a PowerPoint or a deck over. It may be very good work. It's very needed. We work with consultants all the time, so I love consultants. But I like being part of a team. And so ultimately, met a physician through a friend of a friend. We were set up on a business blind date. This gentleman invited us both for coffee and then left us. And who I met was Don Lazis, who's a physician, a gastroenterologist here in Nashville, and a doctorpreneur, you heard that terminology. And we hit it off and what became a first conversation, an obsessive hobby of what we could do different in clinical research and working with specialists, the hobby, the obsession, you know, sort of put your money in, sweat equity, and we founded Objective Health in 2018.
Great. Thank you for sharing, Colleen. So you mentioned that, you know, you're now in Nashville. We read that you were named as a 2022 Most Admired CEO by the Nashville Business Journal. So just what does that mean to you? And what leadership advice do you have for others that are in the industry?
Like, I'm not a crier. I'm just a not and pretty upbeat. Takes a lot to rattle me. The most admired CEO, it's an application that was filled out by our marketing department. But you know, first, you have to be a successful company. Your company, I think, has to be growing. You do share some financial data and some success of the company in general. But the second piece is people who work with you, people that work around you, have to submit information about working with you. And I actually didn't know that, but like write essays. And so it was a huge surprise to me that I was selected, just very flattered. So it meant a lot to me. It was awesome. As part of the process, the Nashville Business Journal says to sum up your leadership in one word, that everyone has to do this. So it could be collaborative, or it could be inspirational, or it could, you know, there's lots of things it could be. And my word was disarming. That's my leadership style in one word, disarming. And the advice I would give is same advice I give to myself and still give is 80% of life is showing up. You know, it takes 1,000 right decisions across an organization, not by one person, but 1,000 right decisions to sort of move the entity forward towards your, you know, mission, vision. And it's work. It's really engaging. It should be fun, rewarding. It should serve others, but you got to show up. You have to start doing, and every day you have to show up. That's my advice for the industry too. There's so many wonderful things happening. There's so many opportunities, but you have to sort of be relentless about getting up and doing, because there's a lot to be done.
So tell us about Objective Health and what you're currently working on.
Objective Health is a clinical trials health tech company. We partner with specialists. We started as Objective GI, actually, and then converted to Objective Health as we expanded into therapeutic areas beyond gastroenterology. So Objective Health partners with specialists, and I'll say specialty care areas. We're actually partnering with 5 different federally qualified health systems as well. We have 34 of these partnerships across 16 states, working with 480 physicians. And we partner to build a turnkey Centers of Excellence clinical research center that's fully integrated in the electronic health record. And we occupy a small footprint at the point of care. We bring science to the point of care. And we're putting research where research isn't. So we're not amplifying existing research per se. We're a partner, a turnkey solution to partner with experts to open access to their patients for new therapies, new treatments, not only clinical research as a care option, of course, but clinical research as an important ancillary in their health system or their large independent practice. So today we're in the areas of gastroenterology, urology, dermatology, number of dermatology programs, and oncology, because we've expanded into prostate cancer, kidney cancer, bladder cancer through our urology groups. We also just released our first technology to the marketplace in February, and then another piece in June, where our technology that finds the right patients for the right trials through the EHR and uses some AI in terms of similarity scoring with other patients who have enrolled in our system. So we tune the AI to get to the right patients faster in the EHR. We release this to pharma to potentially go across a trial so that we can help enroll the entire trial faster, not just the work in partnership with our specialists and their patients. So pretty exciting times, Objective Health.
Excellent. Just for my own understanding and to try and fit things in neat little boxes, because that's how we do things when we're editors. So you're not an integrated research organization, which some companies call themselves when they bring research into an institution or a practice and conduct the studies for that entity.
I would say we are. I call us an SIRO.
Okay.
When people ask us what we do, I say we're a substantially integrated research organization.
Okay.
Yeah. So the difference, when we partner with an entity, we put their brand forward. So you might not realize that Objective Health is actually running the entity, but all the employees of the entity of each Centers of Excellence are our employees, and we lease them back to the joint venture, if you will. But yes, I would say we're an IRO. That's an accurate description.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And then as far as the AI and EHR piece, there are a number of organizations that do that. I'm just wondering where, and Andy and I have interviewed a number of them, but you know, it's hard to describe AI, I think.
Yeah.
And the EHR. So could you just kind of give us a little bit more insight Sure. into that?
So what we do is we build for a disease state. Let's use fatty liver disease because we started in GI. So we have a lot, we're probably in 30 fatty liver disease trials
mm-hmm.
or what's called non-alcoholic steatohepatitis trials, NASH. But in any case, we take a model that we think will find patients that are underdiagnosed or in NASH, not even diagnosed with NASH. With this particular disease state, and we apply that model to the EHR. So we extract data, the data lake, apply the model, and then we take those patients based on this new curated list. These are the patients we think that have the intended disease state that we're looking for. And then we rank them. Our tech ranks them, which is pretty novel. I'm not aware of anyone else doing this. So we rank them. And we say, okay, these are all the people that look like they might fit the trial. Here's those patients ranked. Then we apply a rule set. This is not uncommon. We apply rules, meaning the trial's inclusion, exclusion. So we apply the rules of the trial. And then as a patient enrolls in our system, because we have the trial across a number of sites, we go back and fine tune the model. So it's what's the right model to find patients. It's applying the inclusion exclusion criteria. It's ranking the patients. Who should I call first on this list of 100 or 1,000 or whatever it is, so you can get to the right patient faster. And so we're inferring a rank order. And then also our technology for our own systems is attached to our provider's schedule. So we're also then attaching patients above a 60% threshold, let's say, who are coming in, who look like they might be right for the trial, to the provider schedule, who's our partner. But for our technology across a trial, it's both rules-based and ranks and prioritized patients, and then similarity scores based on other patients enrolled in the trial. Those are the three essential components that I think are important to mention.
Thank you, Colleen. So we talked a bit about clinical research in the past. We've touched on what it looks like currently and some things that Objective Health is working on. Now, where do you see clinical research in the future in, let's say, the next 5 years?
I think all of healthcare is going to become a clinical research engine. With personalized medicine and the demand of differentiating care, I think most of healthcare will look like cancer care looks today, which a tremendous percentage of cancer care are in high functioning research entities and are always looking for research or to better understand an outcome in cancer care. I'll say it that way, whether it's registry or some other way. I think all of healthcare is moving that way, which just really shines a light on our profession. I think research will become an important connector across systems and integrator where there's gaps in care for underdiagnosed and undiagnosed. I think the concept of sequencing care, research will play a very important role. Maybe the way we define research will even change in how we use digital diagnostics. My hope is even within 5 years, we'll become much more sophisticated about when patients should be on a medicine, when they should get off a medicine, it's working, it's not working, more value-based care-oriented thinking, and research, tuning, and considering what needs to happen when will become an important field.
Excellent. That's very exciting. I was just jotting that all down. Thank you so much, Colleen. Thank you for being on the podcast. and sharing this with us. I found it fascinating, very interesting. Appreciate your thoughts.
I love it. And I love talking to both of you.
Yep. Thank you, Colleen.
Thank you. Take care.